Long time we shouldn't left you without a dope peak to step to. Hi guys, and welcome to episode 6 of Trust in the Process with myself, Deborah Chosen. How are you guys doing? It has been a minute and some change. You miss me or nah? Please say you've missed me. It'd be really awkward if you haven't, but I've actually missed you guys. It's been definitely been over a month since the last podcast, but I want to say thank you to you guys for continuing to listen. It's crazy because the other day I was going through the SoundCloud for one thing or the other, and I was like, dang, these views be racking up even in my absence. Like that's crazy to me, and that really means a lot. So I'm just really grateful that you guys are still digging the content, and I'm super excited to bring to you a new episode. I guess you could say a new season. I'm not really doing things in seasons with this podcast yet, so to speak, but I do feel like I am entering into a new season, and so I think that will be reflected in, you know, the episode to come. So let's see how things go. But of course, today we're going to be talking careers. I'm going to be sharing all the truth about what it is that I do, the realities of social media, how I got there, and all of that good stuff. But before we jump into that, as per usual, we have to talk life updates because that's what we do here on Trust in the Process. So where have I been? What have I been up to? The last time we spoke, I was going to Dublin, if you guys recall. And so I came back from there. It was amazing. It was really good. It's funny because it was literally just a weekend. So it flew by, but it was a very much needed weekend away. I find that the more and the more that I travel solo, the more that I'm like, dang, like I could get used to this. Like I likes this. One of the most amazing things I find about traveling solo is that it really opens you up to meeting new people. And when I say new people, I don't just mean new people. It's weird. When you travel solo, it's like suddenly amazing people come forward. Like I've had so many profound conversations, divine moments with absolute strangers on my trips, on my travels abroad. And you know, I say travels abroad, I've been abroad solo 3 times now. First time being America, second time Barcelona, and of course now Dublin, so a little bit closer to home. But I've had such like significant experiences whilst being away by myself. As I spoke about on episode 3, where I was talking about lessons learned at the age of 27, Barcelona was super significant for me because that's basically where I got healed from heartbreak. Basically, if you guys didn't catch on, that's basically what it was. It was so necessary for me to be there by myself. I don't think that would have happened in such a significant way had I not traveled solo at that time. America, which was my first solo trip, as I said, in probably 2013, I will never ever forget a conversation that I had with a gentleman on the plane on the way. So America obviously is no short flight. Like we spoke nonstop for like 6 hours. I kid you not. When I say that conversation was riveting, life shifting. Oh my goodness. Like in hindsight, he was definitely some CEO of like one big like accounting firm or something like that. I can't even remember. The name's going to come to me. PwC, that was it. He was some senior person in PwC. American guy, like absolutely amazing. And now Ireland, Dublin, my most significant experience was meeting an eclectic family from, oh goodness, where were they from? The guy was from New York. His sister was from Houston, I want to say. And then the other girl was from Chicago. My gosh, it was insane. Like I basically met this family, and one of the girls also had a daughter. So really it was a family of 4. So it started with me being like, hey, would you mind taking a picture for me? To the little girl holding an umbrella for me whilst I was doing this image, which turned into a photo shoot. Then it began to like pour with rain. Then it turned into us exploring together. Then before I knew it, it was the end of the night and we were sitting in a traditional Irish pub talking about faith, like love, parenting. Like, it was absolutely amazing. And what's crazy is I genuinely feel like I've made, I wouldn't say like lifelong friends, but definitely lifelong acquaintances, which could become friends. Me and the guy Drew, he's like, let me know when you're in New York, just let me know. I don't know what accent that was, but I definitely will be hitting him up, most definitely. So if you're thinking about the whole solo travel thing, if you haven't done it before, I 110% would recommend it. Just give it a try. You don't know unless you go. Just give it a try and you might be surprised at how amazing the experience can be. On a different note, what other updates? So your girl dropped a newsletter whilst I've been away. One of the things that I really have been wanting to do is to figure out a way to package my writing. If you followed me for some time, you'll know that I've kind of always kept a blog. I've written for different magazines. Like, writing was basically, or is, my first love, really and truly. But recently I found that I didn't know what kind of space to occupy with that. So I kind of did a bit of thinking and, you know, meditation and whatnot. And I came to the conclusion that I'm going to do a newsletter and I think it's going to be amazing. In fact, it is amazing. It launched last week. So there's still time to join if you're not already signed up. It's really, really simple. I'm going to put the link to the sign up page in the description. But basically, you can go find that link also on my Instagram bio link. Just sign up. And what this is going to be is basically just kind of a overflow of the podcast. So one of the things that I always knew about this podcast is that although in many ways it's about me telling stories and enabling people to share their stories, I knew that this whole process was going to be key for myself. Even creating this podcast was going to be a journey for myself, and many lessons were going to be learnt, and I was going to be stretched. And I'm now just seeing that this is a space where I'll be able to share that. So this is a space to share my journey more up close, more honestly, with you guys, more candidly. So kind of what I'm navigating week on week, I guess. I'm also going to be sharing a lot on what I am loving at that time. So as you guys might know, I'm kind of never not watching or listening to something. I intake multimedia like a junkie. Really, I do. And so it will be a really good space to just share with you guys things that are inspiring me, and hopefully will inspire you as well. So yeah, definitely sign up if you haven't already and join the newsletter tribe. Those are probably all the updates. So let's jump into this good podcast. This is going to be episode 6 on careers, challenging no and contentment versus complacency. So let's jump right in. So I think no career podcast would be complete without me sharing on my own personal career journey. So I basically went to university in Leicester. I went to the University of Leicester where I studied English and psychology. At the time, honestly speaking, I kind of went between a few different options in terms of what I wanted to do. English is and was my first love. You know how, like, I don't know if it's just me, I don't know if other people can relate, but there's always been one thing that you're just very good at or that comes very natural to you. English, writing, reading has always been that for me since young. And so that was a bit of a no-brainer. I'd done it at A-level. I've always loved it. I knew I was going to do that. And a part of me also originally thought I was going to go into journalism. So that's kind of why I stuck with that. And then why did I study psychology on the side? So I picked psychology up in college. So I did that for... what do they do in college? A-level. Did that for A-level and loved it. I've always been really interested in the mind, in, as you can probably guess, in people's processes, in how we reason things, in how our upbringing affects us, in, you know, the whole nature versus nurture. All of that good stuff has always been very, very interesting to me. And funnily enough, as I dug deeper into psychology in my degree, a side of me actually thought that I was going to go into clinical psychology. So that once upon a time was actually one of the dreams. So here I am, I'm in uni. I have these two different sides to me, so to speak, and then a plethora of other things that I'm discovering about myself. I was doing spoken word, like I was on the ACS planning events. there was kind of a lot going on, a lot of learning and discovering. So graduation comes and you know how it is, you know, you throw your cap in the air and you're like, cool, I'm out in the big wide world. I was maybe a bit naive to think that getting a job would be a lot easier than what it actually was. One thing that I really wish is that I had done more internships slash done internships full stop whilst studying. So I didn't do any internships until I actually graduated. And so I embarked on 3 different internships, I would say, over the course of a year. So the first one was actually at Black Beauty and Hair Magazine, which is probably the UK's most popular black hair magazine, actually, still to this day. It's quite iconic. If you've ever been to a hair salon, you have likely picked up this magazine and looked at the Just For Me ads and the Revlon ads and the Kerrygare ads and, you know, lusted after their shiny, relaxed hair. So I went to intern with them for 2 weeks. And as I said, kind of the plan was to see how the whole journalism thing was. But the reality was that actually over the course of those 2 weeks, I got thrown into the deep end with social media. Because when I was at Black Beauty and Hair, social media was still, it's not that social media was new, but certain brands were still new to the idea of using it, you know, to boost their platform. So I came in and kind of one of my daily tasks was to basically grow their channels on Twitter. And I think it was probably Facebook at the time. Instagram wasn't even popping like that, imagine. So I did that. My next internship was actually in PR. So I went to intern in an agency called Ketchum, and they're basically like a huge agency dealing with a bunch of different clients across many different sectors. So some of my clients were Philips, Hovis, Wedgwood. So it was quite a nice variety. And I think working agency was really good for me to get a feel for what kind of brands I enjoy working with. Nonetheless, I kind of discovered along the way PR wasn't exactly what I was looking for. And I think that's key about internships, that I don't think people should place pressure on themselves within internships necessarily to have everything figured out. The point from my experience of an internship is to learn, what you like, what you don't like, and to just grow as a person. And so I kind of grew out of PR over those 3 months in London, and I began to explore the wider world of marketing. So I went back to Birmingham, which is where my family live, and I basically interned, I think over about 3 months again, for a marketing agency over there. And that was quite a shift for me, because that's when I realized, this is what I was looking for. Because I think oftentimes there is kind of a misconception that PR and marketing are the same thing, whereas they are not. And one of the things about my industry as well, which is both great and both quite frustrating, is that there's quite a lot of overlap in terms of different roles. So social media exec in one company might do a very different thing to a social media exec in another company. A PR manager might do a very different thing to a PR manager elsewhere. Needless to say, so here I am, did the marketing agency thing, and I was like, cool, I think this is what I want to do from now moving forward. And so I managed to land my first job with an agency again in Birmingham. So I was with this agency for just over, I think it was just close to 2 years. It was about 1 year and 10 months that I was with them. And this was a small agency, guys. Like when I say small, this was small. It's funny because sometimes when you graduate, you have these goals of like, you want to go straight for the big agencies, whether you're working in advertising or whatever it might be. You know, you want to go straight from the Adam and Eves and the DDBs, and that's great. But one thing that I would say is do not belittle the amount of experience, like real experience, that you can gain within a smaller agency. Because within this agency, there were literally 4 of us when I started, including my 2 managers. Okay, so yeah, do the math. What was really great about it is because we were so small in numbers, I was really, really thrown all over the gaff. So your girl, Deborah, even though this was really my first marketing role, you know, I was completely in control of a number of different clients' accounts. I was doing new business pitches. So we were going out to brands. I was doing presentations to get them basically on board as clients. I was flown abroad to do photography for a restaurant. Photography, you know, with my camera, mind you. Like we really just made things work, basically. And that was probably to this day, the most significant role I've had somewhere in terms of learnings. It was definitely an amazing stepping stone for me. And so fast forward, had a few more roles in between, and here I am now at Monsoon Accessorize. So Monsoon Accessorize, for those of you that don't know, are basically high street fashion brands. Monsoon is kind of more popular for selling clothes, and Accessorize, as you can guess from the title, is popular for selling accessories. So both brands are housed within one building. However, I only work on Accessorize. So I am the social media executive for Accessorize. If you've ever wondered, that is what I do. One of the exciting things about social media is that it's ever changing. And so as all the new trends are popping up, like, you're having to adapt your strategy, your plans, your content. When I started, just to give you guys context, my role actually was YouTube executive, feeding into Snapchat. So when I started 2 years ago, their main focus was YouTube and Snapchat, because that's what was popping for brands then. Imagine our whole Snapchat that most of us have now neglected. But yeah, that was popping. And then a few months into my role, maybe about a year in, actually, I would say, Instagram stories pops out of nowhere, and we're all like, abandon ship, forget Snapchat. That's not where it's at. Let's move to Instagram stories. And so you have to move with the times. And with that, it does keep your work fresh and exciting. So in terms of what I actually do, so a lot of people might think that you literally just sit on Facebook and Twitter all day long, tweeting and posting. And whilst posting and scheduling is a big part of what I do, there's definitely a lot more to that. And one of my favorite things about my role as social media executive is working with influencers, working with people. I'm a real people person. I like conversation. I like being up close and personal with people. And so when we do shoots, that's probably one of my favorite things, because you get the opportunity to do just that. And you can actually see, you know, what you're creating basically come to life before your eyes. So influencer marketing is huge right now. So that is a big portion of what I do. So within that, there would be, I sometimes have to go and pull product from stores, organizing the briefs for the different influencers, so what we want them to basically create for us, negotiating, budgeting, scheduling, definitely creating content, whether that is on shoot, whether that is within the office, whether that's on location, whatever the case may be. So one of our most recent shoots were at London Fashion Week, for example. It's a real mix of things. There is a lot of working online, of course. I'm basically working in the digital industry, so there is a lot of sitting on your computer, don't get me wrong, but there are also opportunities to get out and about and create some amazing things. So that's kind of in a nutshell what I do. Okay, so how I got the role at Monsoon. Now, this is a bit of a interesting story. I've actually told this on Twitter, so if you're following me, you might have seen this, but I'm gonna retell it, okay? So I basically had a year of applying for work. I had previously been made redundant from a role. And, you know, at first I was like, it's okay, everything's gonna be all right. Gonna be okay. I'm eligible employee, it's fine. So I started doing my applications, and, you know, a month went to 3 months, and 3 months turned to 6 months. And before I knew it, it was nearly a year and still no job. And it was, to say it was difficult would be an understatement. It was hella hard. It was painful, very, very painful. I was so broke. Like, when I think about it, I'm like, dang, I was so broke. I think when I really deeped how, like, the depth of my brokenness was basically, like, you know you're broke when you start looking around your house for things to sell. Like, that was my life. So it came to a point in that year where I had this genius idea that I was basically going to find all our old mobile phones in the house, because for some reason we just have bare, and I was going to sell every single one of them, and I was calculating how much I'd make. These times, these mobile phones were going for about £20 each. Like, it was very pitiful, to be honest. And so one day, after trying to sell, you know, every single mobile phone device that we had, I was like, I need to sell something that's a bit more tangible, something that, you know, has weight. And so in our guest room in my parents' home, there's this TV there. And when I tell you, nobody watches this TV, this TV has been collecting dust. So I was like, it's calm if I, it's so calm if I sell this. And I looked at it and I was like, I could probably make a cool 70. And at that time, 70 was like, that I'd be living for at least a minute. It wasn't until I posed the idea to my dad that I realized, like, nah, this has gone too far. Because my dad was like, Deborah, we know you are struggling, but you can't sell our TV. It's still a part of the house. You can't just sell things just because you need money. You can't just... And I was like, right, okay, cool. That was kind of like rock bottom. That was kind of rock bottom. Because I was like, let me sell the TV. I was definitely looking at my mom's gold. Like, man, could have made a lot from that. But that's just to give you guys a bit of insight into the realities of, you know, being unemployed for such a long time. I felt a lot of... I don't know if I felt shame. I just felt a lot of frustration. You would feel shame, but you'd only feel shame when someone would kind of ask you, like, how's the job hunt thing going? Like, you know, how are things going? And obviously people would mean well, but when you have no new update to give anyone, that can be really frustrating and just make you feel like a failure, essentially. And so for a year, I kind of had to navigate that. And don't get me wrong, I had numerous interviews. This was what was painful about it. I was having many interviews, majority in London. In fact, all of them were in London. But I would always get to the final stage. Always. I'd always get to like it's like they place it in my hand and then they take it away. It would always happen. And so when Monsoon came around, by this point, I had actually just received a rejection for another company that I was really, really setting my mind on. And that rejection was strange because I had gone through two interviews. It was an agency and I'd gone through two interviews and they'd actually offered me the role. I was like, wow, I actually got a job. I got a job. This was about, you know, like a year into my hunt. I got the job and I'm like, wow. Only for them to turn around and say basically that because of budget issues, they've had to retract the role and they can't hire until further notice. So you can imagine my frustration. And so when the Monsoon one came up, which was soon after, I was like, right, I have to kill this interview. This is my job. This is it. This is me. So I gave it my everything in the application, only to then receive an email saying you've been unsuccessful in the application. So I don't know where this stubbornness came from, but there was something that kicked in my mind that was like, nah, that's mine. You people, no more no's. No more no's. Like, I'm not receiving any more rejections. It's not happening. And in the last episode with Olamide, we spoke a lot about hustling. And that's something you guys are going to hear me talk about quite a bit throughout this podcast, I'm sure, because hustle is so integral, not just as a Black woman, but just as a young person in this day and age. For anyone who wants to be somebody, hustle is going to be necessary. And so I think this is kind of where my hustle mentality really kicked in hard. So I basically called up Monsoon and I asked to speak to a member of HR. I can't remember exactly what I said, but essentially it must have been something along the lines of, hi, my name's Deborah Ludare. I'm basically calling regarding the role of YouTube executive at Monsoon Accessorize as I'd recently applied. And unfortunately, I'd received an email to say that I was unsuccessful and I just wanted to call basically to challenge that, as I felt that actually I was very passionate about this role and I wanted to make sure that that was well communicated. I don't know, something like that, something. Anyways, so they put me on the phone to this woman from HR and she's like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. Let me just have a look at your application. So she pulls up my application and I'm sitting on the phone shaking like a leaf, like what's going to happen next? What am I actually going to say from here? Because I hadn't really prepared anything. I just knew this was my job and no one was going to take it from me. Like I just knew there had to be another way. And so she basically said to me that, oh, yeah, for some reason, looking through your application, it basically just looks like, essentially, she couldn't tell that I had had real experience with YouTube within a company. They could only see that I had a YouTube channel. Very bizarre. Don't know why, but that was it. And so she was basically like, how about you go over your CV and highlight the bits that you think that we may have missed, that you think are really important to stand out, send that back to me and then I'll see what we can do. So obviously, man highlighted that thing quicker than like, you can say Bob's your uncle. I was fast, highlighted probably everything. You know, I had an interview and 2 years later, here I am in the job that technically said no. And that's something that I really wanted to talk about in this podcast. The idea of challenging no and not taking no for an answer when it comes to our careers, when it comes to building our dreams. I think oftentimes we think that the orthodox way that something is done is how we have to continue to do it. And sometimes we can be afraid to push back, to go again. One of my favorite Bible stories comes from 1 Kings, and it's 1 Kings 18, 43 to 44 that I'm going to read. Basically, what's happening here is that Elijah is talking to his servant, and he's basically said to his servant, I hear the sound of rain. There is the sound of rain coming. So Elijah says to his servant, go up now, look toward the sea. And he went up and looked and said, there is nothing. So Elijah said, go again 7 times. And at the 7th time, he saw. Now, why I love the scriptures, because it speaks to me, the way that we need to hustle, the way that we need to be determined, the way that we need to not take no for an answer, the way that we need to push beyond what we see in order to actually lay hold of the promises of God. So concerning this role, for example, because there was a knowing on the inside of me that this role is mine, that I'm destined to be in that place, I chose to kind of go beyond what I could see. This email said no. I had received over 100 probably emails saying no over the course of that year. But why is it that I felt a need to challenge this particular no? When there's that knowing inside of you, when there is that kind of like an igniting of passion, and it might look like stubbornness, and to be honest, sometimes stubbornness is good. But when that is inside of you, oftentimes it's the Holy Spirit telling you to go again. Career-wise, sometimes going again looks like sending that chaser email. Sometimes it looks like going to the actual office yourself. One day I'll tell you guys the full story about how I actually went to apply for a role. And by the time I went to apply for it, it had expired. And so one of my friends suggested, why don't you just go to the office? So please trust and believe, I went to Central London, walked into this office. This is a big company, walked into this office and basically told them that this job is mine and can I speak to someone about it? Like, and managed to get through to the next stage. Like, you can't afford to take no for an answer in this economy. I am of the belief that there's always a back door. Always look for the back door. About a month ago, I came across the story of this young boy called Reggie Nelson. So this guy is a Ghanaian boy from East London. He actually decided to go and knock on the doors of the wealthiest area in the UK, which surprisingly, maybe for some, is Kensington and Chelsea. So he knocked on the doors until eventually someone answered the door who goes by the name of Quinton Price. Now, Quinton Price is the head of the Alpha Strategies business at BlackRock. And BlackRock is a global equity firm with over $6.3 trillion of assets under management. So simply put, they have money. They got the bag. Okay, they have secured several bags. So he knocks on this guy's door, and every single door he was knocking on, he was basically asking them one question, and that was, what did you do to amass the wealth that you have? And so in this case, when he knocks on Quinton Price's door, that actually led to a conversation. So I watched an interview, and Quinton Price was saying how touched and kind of how impressed he was by this young boy's kind of balls, I guess you could say, to just go out and just ask people, his determination and him using his own initiative. And so Quinton basically managed to set up work experience for Reggie in this firm where he was the youngest in the building. Out of 115 people that were on the internship, only 3, including Reggie, were Black. So when I say you have to hustle differently for what you want in this life, please just, if you don't want to believe my story, please believe Reggie's. He said in his interview, if you want to see different results, you need to come out of your comfort zone and see something different. In the same way that Elijah's servant needed to come out of his comfort zone and keep on going, keep going back to that same place until he saw the rain. Sometimes in life, you will be required to go again, to question that no, to challenge that no, and to basically always look for the back door, because you never know when the right person will be on the other side. Now, with it being September, traditionally, this is quite a key time for people to begin to consider the next steps. You know, the seasons are changing and, you know, the kids are going back to school and you kind of just start to get this, some people anyways, kind of just start to get this itch to do something new. And I would say that this year was the first time that I really recognized how significant September can be for that. I definitely kind of started to get a bit of an itch and started to really think forward and kind of look at where I'm at. I think oftentimes when it comes to our careers, we can just get into the motion of things, that we tell ourselves that we're happy when truly we're just comfortable. And so what do you do when you realize that what you do no longer fulfills you? Number one, acknowledge it, accept it, forgive yourself. I remember when in an old role, one day I kind of woke up and I realized I don't actually enjoy this anymore. I don't enjoy this. I'm not growing and I don't enjoy that. And I remember feeling a bit bad because that was, you know, that was my first like professional role. And so at one point that was everything to me. That was something that I wanted so badly. So to now not want it, part of me felt guilty. But the truth of the matter is that we grow, we outgrow our jobs in the same way that sometimes we outgrow relationships, people, places. And so accept it and acknowledge it and don't fight the process. Number two, what to do when what you do no longer fulfills you is to ask yourself, what changes do I need to make? Taking responsibility is so key. I know how it feels to be in a role where I'm not content and just complain and somehow expect that my complaining is going to cause a role to come up or someone to headhunt me. Baby girl, ain't no one going to help you like you can help yourself. I think one thing that adulting teaches you is that nobody's going to rescue you. A favor is very real. Yes, favor is very real. And yes, your gift will bring, you know, will bring you before kings and will make room for you. But no one is going to rescue you. You need to do the work. And so sit down and kind of contemplate, okay, what is it that I need to do to get to where I want to get to? There's a phrase that says, if you do not like somewhere, move, you are not a tree. And I'm sorry, but I think that is the most Nigerian phrase ever. You are not a tree. Come on, get up. But that's it. You're not a tree, my dear. So if you're not happy, make moves. Number three is establish the season you are in. I've definitely been in a role where I was discontent and I kind of failed to look at the season as a whole. I failed to look at, okay, how many savings do I have right now? Is this a good time? That's a good question to ask yourself. Is now the right time to move? I've come to find that a good thing at the wrong time is not a good thing. And so use discernment to establish the season that you're in. And the final step, number four, is to finish well. The Bible even says that the end of a thing is better than the beginning. How we leave a role is so significant. It's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever like changed church, okay? To my Christians that are listening. When you leave a church, there's a way to do it that will like leave you in a good place with the people that you've left behind. And then there's a dramatic way to do it that will really shake tables, really shake tables. I've definitely been guilty of shaking tables and it's not healthy. It's not good. It's not beneficial. Ending well is very, very important. Leave with a good rapport. I remember when I left Planet Nine and that was my choice. So I left after 1 year and 10 months and I'd kind of decided, you know what, it's time to pursue what I've always wanted, which is to move to London for work. So I wrote my notice letter and this is my first notice letter I've ever written. So I did my research and all that stuff. When I say my notice letter was a love letter, was a like signed, sealed and delivered with love. As much as obviously it was time for me to move on and I was, you know, I wasn't shy in expressing that, I was super grateful for the opportunity that I had had because I'd grown so much. I'd learned so much from my two managers. They were probably my most influential managers that I've ever had so far in my career journey. And so I didn't hold back in terms of letting them know how appreciated they were, in terms of letting them know what the role had been for me and kind of just assuring them that this move was a positive one. And in a way that I was able to make this move because of them, because of how much they had helped me grow. And so end well. If it is your time to move, that's okay. But make sure that the chapter that you are closing, you're leaving as much as possible on a good note. One thing I'm really big on is on regularly taking inventory in terms of where I'm at in life, how I feel, if I'm happy with how my life feels. I ask myself, how are you, Deborah? Like every day, like every single day, like sometimes audibly, like will ask myself, because it's so important to just check in and just be honest with yourself. And so I've put together a few questions that might help you if you are kind of reviewing where you're at right now and thinking about the next stage. So question number one is to ask yourself, am I happy or just comfortable? So this is the idea of contentment versus complacency. In a way, the difference between the two can be very subtle. They are miles apart. Contentment is basically being satisfied within a role, being fulfilled within a role. Whereas complacency is simply being comfortable within a role. You've simply become used to your routine. You've become used to your commute. You're familiar with your workmates. And so you've told yourself that you are content, whereas there is a difference. How do you know the difference? You know. Deep down, you know. Sometimes you don't want to confront it. We don't want to confront it, because oftentimes when we have to acknowledge that we're no longer content in a place, that means we're going to have to do some work. And that can be scary. That can be frightening. But you know what's even scarier? Waking up one day and realizing that you've wasted your time in a place that wasn't for you. And so number two is to help you to establish where you do want to be. And so to ask yourself, what makes me come alive? Oftentimes, the thing that makes us come alive is something that just comes so naturally to you. It can sometimes be so natural that it's often overlooked. And so even in recording this podcast, one of the things that people often kind of say to me is that they really enjoy the way that I connect the questions, the way that I navigate questions when interviewing someone. And as much as like, yeah, I thought I did it kind of good, I didn't really realize that it was anything outstanding because it comes so naturally to me. But I love doing that. I love asking questions. I love creating conversations. I love taking you guys on a journey through people's stories. And so pay attention to the things that people say. Sometimes it takes speaking to someone else to see what your hidden treasures really are, to see what those things are that make you come alive, the things that make you light up, that thing that you do. And when you do it, you think, I could happily do this and not be paid. Oftentimes, that's where your passion may lie. And the final step, which is key, is to run towards the fear. There's a phrase that says the space between where you are and where you want to be is fear. Thinking about my goals for this next season of my life, literally what stands between me and those goals are not really obstacles, is fear. Like really, the first thing is fear. First, I have to overcome my own fear to even go through the obstacles, the inevitable obstacles that are on the course of anything that you are pursuing. Anything that is good that you're pursuing will not come without obstacles, right? So first of all, is to run towards that fear as opposed to running away. Sometimes when we think about a dream or a vision or a career that we've always imagined, we think, but who am I to live that life? That's out of reach. That's not realistic. Is that even tangible? But who are you not to live that life? Everything you want is on the other side of fear. And so if you can overcome your fear, if you can face fear, if you can say hello, fear, like, hi, if you can become comfortable with feeling uncomfortable, there's basically nothing you can't do. And so guys, I hope that's been a helpful episode for you and giving you some insight into what it is that I actually do and how on earth we got here. If you guys want to share your thoughts, comments, questions, suggestions, whatever it might be with me, then you can hit me up on my email, and that is deborahchosen@hotmail.com. If you are listening to the podcast, please, please, please share the screen grabs. I love seeing when you guys are listening on Instagram stories in particular. So please be sure to tag me at Deborah Chosen again. That's on Instagram and on Twitter and pretty much anywhere else you might want to find me. It's been a bit of a trip down memory lane, but there's no one else on this earth that I would rather go down that journey with than you guys. So until next time, remember to keep trusting the process. I'll see you in the next one.